I'm John Kral. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Governor Mike Pence's decision to try to ban Syrian refugees from Indiana. That decision provoked controversy and prompted a lawsuit. We will talk with some of the people at the center of the storm. My guests are Jane Henniger, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, Cole Varga, Interim Executive Director of Exodus Refugee Immigration, and the Reverend Ron Deggs of the Disciples Home Missions Division of the Disciples of Christ. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kral, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the Syrian refugee controversy here in Indiana based on Indiana Governor Mike Pence's decision to try to ban Syrian refugees from resettling in the state. My guests are Jane Henniger, who is with the ACLU of Indiana, Cole Varga, who is Exodus Refugee Immigration Interim Executive Director, and Ron Deggs. Who is with the Disciples of Christ and Disciples Home Missions. Welcome to all of you. I'll promise to try to get your names right here in the rest of the hour.
Thanks, John.
Got it.
Thanks.
And I probably should say to our listeners, just in the spirit of full disclosure, that obviously at one point in my career, I had Jane's job. I was the executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union and is now the ACLU of Indiana. Questioning here, though, will obviously try to be as disinterested as possible. And I also would invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to start with this really wasn't an issue until the Paris attacks, and then almost immediately, like 2 or 3 days afterwards, the announcement came down from the governor, and there were a lot of governors across the country who decided that they wanted to try to do this. How did your organization first find out? Because I should say, how long have you been involved in attempting to resettle Syrian refugees?
Well, Exodus has existed since 1981, so about 34 years. I've been with the agency around 6.5 years, resettling refugees from many countries. Syrians have been a recent group that we worked with in the past year or so, year and a half.
Okay, so about a year and a half, and there were actually refugees from Syria who were in the pipeline at the time this decision came down. Because there's
Correct.
A well-publicized case of a family that was supposed to land in Indianapolis and was in Indiana and rerouted to Connecticut. How about your organization, Ron?
We've been involved in refugee resettlement through our congregations for about 85 years now. And some years in partnership with the refugee resettlement organizations, we have resettled 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 individuals, many families, as a part of our Christian practices to show hospitality.
So how did you find out? I'll stay with you for a moment, Ron, and then because I think it's going to be easier for people to understand this, how we got to the point where there's a lawsuit and what the issues are involved if we understand the timeline that led to it. So how did you find out about the governor's decision that he wanted to try to ban refugees from Syria from coming to the state?
I was watching the tube when he made an announcement about placing a ban on Syrian refugees and immediately had a sick space in the center of my soul and heart because of the need that these people have that have been displaced, 5 million strong, looking for a place to go, particularly during this season where another one had no place to lay his head and neither did his family. And there was a compassionate innkeeper that provided a place. And we can do no less than that.
So, and I obviously I understand the faith-based imperative that,
yes.
that you feel here. But in terms of establishing the other thing, you didn't get a call beforehand.
No.
The first word came came via, you know, a televised announcement.
Yep.
Cole, how about you? Was your organization's story the same?
We heard it from the media as well. We have not heard from the governor's office before, during, or after any of this, aside from the one letter from the head of DFR telling us to stop the program temporarily or however long they decide.
Okay, so we've got now a decision that was made, and I think at this point probably, Jane, it is appropriate for you to enter the conversation. Under what authority can a governor do this?
Our complaint on behalf of Exodus, our lawsuit, says under no authority. The decision of admission and resettlement of refugees is exclusively the federal government. That's quite clear. We argue that both the decision on behalf of the governor to suspend this program as to Syrian refugees in particular is a violation both of that preemption, that this is a federally exclusive power, but also in violation of the laws and constitution of our country that bans discrimination on the basis of national origin. His order is targeted to Syrians only, and we think that clearly the Constitution, as well as explicit multiple federal laws, prohibit this action on his part.
Is there been any kind of counter argument other than the one that we have seen in the media? And I probably should say to our listeners right now, we have reached out to the state to ask if they wanted to appear, and a representative wanted to appear on the program, and those phone calls have not been returned. So the invitation at least has not been accepted. Has there been a counter-argument, some assertion of legal authority to make this decision, or is it too early in the litigation?
It is too early in the litigation. So we have, after filing the initial complaint, which is the first step always, which was on Thanksgiving week, some timing that was not lost on any of us, in a week of Thanksgiving and openness to have to file this lawsuit hurt all of us in our hearts. The next step was we filed our brief, and the state has time and has not yet reached its deadline to file its response brief.
And since then, obviously, we have seen there has been a family from Syria that has been resettled here. Presumably, you know, how does that work? And is that in defiance of the governor's ban, or is the governor not attempting to enforce the ban at this point, Jane?
It's a little unclear about the state's stance. So, and Cole can talk about the several ways in which the state government is a conduit for federal money that reaches refugees, but it's on multiple levels. And my understanding is that as to this family, the family was resettled without support from one aspect pool of federal monies, but that the governor said that his agency would not stand in the way if they, once here, the refugees filed for other services. But we're not clear whether that's happened, whether they filed for assistance, whether what the response in the state as to those pools of money, and I can go into those different buckets or Cole.
Well, it sounds like maybe you've cued Cole here
right.
to a degree to
sure.
to walk us through what is the typical process, what funds are involved in.
Yes, so it's a State Department program at the core of it. The State Department welcomes in these refugees, so it's federal dollars up front in the first couple of months that are. Being passed through national agencies to smaller resettlement agencies such as ours at Exodus. In addition to those federal dollars, there's also normal welfare benefits that refugees are eligible for. So that would be temporary assistance for needy families, TANF, SNAP, also known as food stamps, and refugee Medicaid. So those are in partnership with the state, but a lot of federal money involved in that. And then there's some other programs, some supplemental programs from the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is under Health and Human Services. And these would be mostly focused in employment and health areas. So some of those funds are coming through the 9 national affiliate agencies that we work with, 2 at Exodus, actually. But there's 9 national agencies. And then some of that money is coming through the state and done by reimbursement to whatever agencies are in the state.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Syrian refugee situation here in Indiana. Obviously, the governor's decision to try to ban refugees from Syria from resettling here. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener named Ronald has done and find us via Twitter at WFYI. Ronald says, all humanity is calling for compassion for the Syrian refugees. Indiana must do the same. So... Was that you, Ron?
That was me.
Oh
yes,
my
sir.
Goodness! Okay. So you are actually completing the loop here. This is sort of like the ultimate echo chamber here. All right. Well, I only see the first names, folks. I don't see the last one on the tweets. But that gets to obviously Cole and Ron. You're operating primarily from a moral imperative here.
Correct,
Ron?
Yes, yes.
Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, it's both a moral imperative that you do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a balance in our faith communities between judgment and compassion. Compassion always wins out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a love imperative to love your neighbor. And it's central to who we are as not only people of faith, but to people that are part of this humanity that is bleeding right now.
Cole?
Well, in my opinion, the refugee resettlement program is one of the best things we do as a country, helping those who can't help themselves, bringing in those in most need, the most vulnerable people in the world, into the country.
Jane, the ACLU comes at this from a slightly different perspective. I mean, the argument in your case often is about the arbitrary exercise of government power and restraining that to some degree. Could you speak to that issue?
Yeah, the underlying equal protection arguments in this case are quite clear. We protect our Constitution, our whole system of laws is threaded with this notion that people should not be treated differently because of who they are if that basis is a classification that we deem impermissible. So we say that you can't treat someone differently because of their race, because of their sex, and definitely because of their national origin. And so from a legal standpoint, this conflicts with that quite clearly, explicitly. This is discriminatory. But, our Constitution and our system of laws are founded on this moral concept of that Ron has talked about and Cole has talked about.
And we probably should ask the question, at least in legal terms, does it make a difference that the people who are being affected here are not citizens of the United States?
No.
No? Okay.
That's the easy answer.
Why?
And we can
that?
Talk about standing,
yeah,
which is a different issue, but from whether they're citizens or not, it does not matter.
Okay. So the protections of our law apply to people regardless of whether they are citizens of the country.
Right. And then there's explicit case law that refugees get that protection equally.
Okay. We are talking about the Syrian refugee situation here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jane Henniger, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Indiana, Cole Varga, who is with Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Ron Deggs, who is with the Disciples of Christ, Disciples Home Missions. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Syrian refugees relocating or not in Indiana based on Governor Pence's decision to try to ban refugees from Syria from resettling here. My guests are Jane Henniger, who is with the ACLU of Indiana, Cole Varga, who is with Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Ron Deggs, who is with the Disciples of Christ, Disciples Home Missions. Again, I'm going to do the disclosure at the top of every segment here and make it clear to our listeners that at one point I was the executive director of the what was then the ICLU and is now the ACLU of Indiana, so that we are not withholding that information. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Mark has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mark, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your guest. I have a question, and then I have a comment. My question is this, that do you believe that, and I understand the part where it says in the Bible, it says charity is the greatest gift of all, but I believe also in the word, too, it says that you should use some wisdom about some things, and I just don't think that, you know, by me being a Christian myself, that I wouldn't let anybody to my house by not having a full understanding of who they are, or, you know, someone off the street, if I don't have, you know, knowing their background. So that being said, I'm just saying, you know, you have people that have, like, for example, the authorities, higher authorities that we have placed of this country that has given us information that said, okay, we don't have a lot of background on these people that are coming into the country. My question is to all the agencies that you have on your program there, do you think that they're using, or do you think to the host or the guest, that you're using sound wisdom and making the decision just to let people in the country, and then based upon who they are associated with, it's possible that, you know, you never know. Like the gentleman from the other state, they grew up and they was in Los Angeles and San Bernardino, and then they decided to, you know, to bomb people. So my question is to you is, using wisdom based upon the things that are going on to right now, do you think that you're using sound wisdom? Because the Bible says, in all thy getting, you should get an understanding. So I would like to know.
Okay, I think you framed the question well, Mark. I'm gonna throw it to the Reverend Deggs first.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call,
Mark. That's a great question, and the answer to it is that faith and wisdom are always linked, and faith is never blind; it's always sighted. Because of the understanding we have that we are connected together as God's people across religious lines, across ethnic and racial lines, that we find a oneness and a wholeness that is uniquely ours. And so the wisdom there is that we have found a higher plane to live on, and a higher place where we can exercise our ability to care for one another.
We've gotten an email. Do you want to jump in on
that,
Jane?
Yeah, I just want to jump in and point out that no right of constitutional right otherwise is absolute, and there's always a balance of interests, and certainly keeping us safe is a top role of government. We all want to be safe, but we want to be safe within our core values by maintaining our freedom and our humanity as a people. We recognize, and the appropriate legal test that this issue will be put recognizes, that government may have a compelling governmental interest, and if they narrowly tailor the way that they pursue that interest, it may allow them to discriminate on the basis of national origin. But that's the test, and our position is that in this instance, there isn't a basis for the government, for Governor Pence in the state of Indiana, to prove that they meet that standard by any measure. John, you talked at the top of the hour about how this was precipitated seemingly by the Paris bombing attack, which was horrific, horrified the world. There was evidence or suggestion that one of the perpetrators had come across as a Syrian or disguised as a Syrian refugee. And that in and of itself does not justify a concern that meets that high limit the government has to meet. That's a generic concern, and we're targeted to a specific set of Syrian refugees who, unlike those refugees throughout Europe where those countries are getting inundated, and thank goodness those many countries in the Middle East and in Europe are stepping up to address that refugee problem, but they aren't able to do the incredible background check that we do in the United States. The family that was turned away to Connecticut had gone through almost or more than 2 years of background checks. If you look through the process, it's an incredibly lengthy, arduous process. 100%? Nothing's 100% in the world, but there's nothing to suggest that there's something so compelling that justifies the state of Indiana discriminating on the basis of national origin in this instance.
Well, and I want to give Cole a chance too, but I don't think anyone's going to ask this question. I probably should. Is there at some level either some ethnic or religious bigotry involved in this decision? Because, in the Paris attacks, yes, one of the presumed terrorists was, did try to come in as a refugee, but the others were, presumably French citizens. Even in the attack and the shootings in California, one of them was a native-born U.S. citizen, at some level. And beyond that, we focus on the particular faith tradition that these folks come from, while ignoring that there are people from faith, almost every faith tradition, my apologies to all of our listeners, who have committed horrific acts at different times. How much of this is just about some sort of distrust of the other, someone who is somewhat different than us? Cole, I'm going to throw that tough one to you first.
Sure. Thanks. Well,
there's a reason the show's called No Limits, Cole.
Sure. You made a very good point in your lead into that question that, many of the Paris attackers, in fact, have European passports. And the only person that this governor, Governor Pence, and many other governors have fixated on is the one who may, although I don't believe it's been proven, may be holding a Syrian passport, one of the attackers that was killed. So I think clearly you have to look at that ethnicity and religion in this conversation, surely.
We've gotten an email from a regular listener named Jerry, who, and if you would like to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, is Governor Pence willing to order the Indiana State Police and or National Guard to set up checkpoints on all the roads entering Indiana in order to protect. And he's got checkpoints and in quote marks and protect, which Jerry I know is a sign that the question is somewhat hyperbolic and done with somewhat sarcastic intent, to protect Hoosiers from possible, again, in quote marks, infiltration by terrorists. Jane?
Well, I agree. I think that's a rhetorical question. But I think it also raises a point that once refugees have been screened through this long process and they're resettled in the United States, they have full legal status. They can travel throughout the country. So banning refugee settlement in Indiana or one of the other 24 or 25 other states where governors are actively stating
they were up
that
to 30 at one point, I think.
Right. I think it's down to sort of around 25. They're going to be resettled someplace, and once resettled, they can travel. So unless, to your caller's point, unless we want to try to ban them from coming in, which, again, would require another lawsuit on our part, then, yeah, and banning them from Indiana doesn't do anything.
We are talking about the Syrian refugee situation here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Johnny has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Johnny, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. I appreciate the show. I love the show.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say, as a Catholic here in Indianapolis, whose parish is a block from the governor's mansion, I am so proud of our archbishop for doing the right thing. And I just want to make a quick comment, John, that to the Christian audience that you have that's listening, that we not forget that the Gospel of Luke and the Book of Acts was written by a Syrian from Antioch. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks very much for the call, Johnny. Ron, you want to comment?
Johnny, I would say amen to that, and amen a third time. The fact of the matter is that that part of the world has given birth to some of the best religious life and culture that the world has ever known. And we owe a debt of gratitude to that very place for breathing into life the whole life of the world. And we have an obligation to care for those people there and to recognize that they are just like us, only more so.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Eric, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, hello, Mr. Crawl. Eric, if you're listening to the show, the name's John, and you can call me by my first name, please. I wanted to ask the guests today if they perceive a divide on the issue based on age. As a student, I have listened to many, I would say the majority of my classmates, that fully support welcoming refugees to our city and state. Among these students, the debate only stems from how rigorously we vet incoming refugees. Is the divide widespread, and how will it affect the future of immigration? Cole, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Yeah, so since all this happened in mid-November, I think we've seen an outpouring of support at Exodus from people of all ages and all faiths, actually. So I don't think age is playing much into it, that we've got students, we have elementary school students that want to support refugees, we have college students, and we have seniors and people from all demographics that believe that this is the right thing to do to resettle Syrians. They're reaching out. They're offering up their homes. They're offering up donations, their couches. So I think overwhelmingly the community of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana supports this humanitarian need.
Also gotten an email from a listener named Jean. Says, having moved to Indianapolis from Vermont, I am often frustrated with the policies of the state. I try to do as much as I can. What can I do to help the Syrian refugees? I also live in a wonderful historic neighborhood where my neighbors frequently come together for excellent and compassionate causes. What can we do as a neighborhood? Anything? I'm going to throw that one. I'll let all three of you have a crack at that, but I'll start with Ron.
Yes, there are amazing opportunities to work with these resettlement agencies in our local communities across the country to provide support to refugees. In our congregations across the United States and Canada, we have members of our congregation meet refugees at the airport. Language barriers are great and provide compassionate care, transport them to small granny apartments in the backyard of their home and provide a safe space for them to live. Our churches have blanket drives and pillow drives and furniture drives and for things that are stored in warehouses, waiting for the phone call to come that there's someone that needs a place, a safe place.
So if they want to get on the list, how would they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me by writing www.disciplesmissions.org, okay. rdegs@dhm.org, disciples.org, or calling 317-713-2684.
Okay. Cole, how should they get involved?
Yes. So Exodus could not function without the help of volunteers and church and faith-based communities at our side. So if you visit our website, exodusrefugee.org, there's a volunteer application if you want to get involved that way. As a single individual, you could be paired with a family, a mentor. You could teach English classes. You could do a donation drive. And then larger groups, many churches around the city co-sponsor families and sort of are their first contacts, their first friends in their new community.
And Jane, not to leave you out, if people want to help with the struggle to make sure that that there is no legal impediment here.
Yeah, I don't know if direct legal impediment there's a role, but I do think that there is an urgent role on the part of all residents and citizens to let their leaders, their elected leaders, and others know how they feel and that they believe that we ought to welcome these refugees. It's hard to know motives behind specific actions unless you hear them articulated. But certainly, if nothing else, on the national stage with some of our presidential candidates, it's very clear they have a view that would reject not only on the basis of national origin, but on religion, people entering our country.
And I have to ask the question for you, Jane, here. I know what the answer is going to be, obviously, having been in your chair at one time. But is there any way to establish a religious test for citizenship in the United States?
No, or entrance or otherwise. But, words matter. And rhetoric matters. And even for the refugees who are here and safe, they hear this rhetoric from our leaders or our would-be leaders. And that's a harm in and of itself. So I would say that in addition to tangible efforts, reaching out to your leaders and expressing your concern about the level of rhetoric and how it represents our country, not only here, but across the globe. I mean, we've seen that the words of some of our candidates on the national scale have caused questions among our friends across the globe about whether the United States really stands to be the welcoming place everyone always believes it to be.
Cole, are the refugees you are working with, I mean, are they concerned about the rhetorical tone? Does it add to their anxiety about coming to what is a new place?
Yeah, I think it is concerning, and it's concerning for us being their friends and responsible for their new lives here. So I think there was some concern at first. Recently, several of the families that we resettled this past year have been speaking out. There was the big gathering on Friday night at the Methodist Church in Broad Ripple that did some good to talk about what they're facing, but also several articles in the papers, local papers, that tell the tale of who these people are, who Syrian refugees are, that they're just families trying to start a new life.
We are talking about Syrian refugees coming to Indiana here on No Limits. My guests are Jane Henniger, who's with the ACLU of Indiana, Cole Varga, who is with Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Ron Deggs, The Disciples of Christ, Disciples Home Missions. I am John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the resettlement of Syrian refugees in Indiana in the wake of Governor Mike Pence's attempt to ban Syrians from refugees from resettling here and a subsequent legal challenge by several organizations represented by the ACLU of Indiana. This is the point when I probably ought to say at one time I was the executive director of what was then the ICLU and is now the ACLU of Indiana. My guests are the current executive director of the ACLU of Indiana, Jane Henniger, Cole Varga, who is with Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Ron Deggs, who is with the Disciples of Christ, Disciples Home Missions. Got an email from a listener named Dana. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The name is spelled D-A-Y-N-A. And if you would like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, my husband's family is Pakistani. Had they not had the opportunity to immigrate here, we would not be a family today. When our governor makes grand statements about immigration, it has emotional effects on the minds of people toward Middle Eastern families who are already here. Do your guests believe that Pence's calls for restricted immigration create greater unfounded fears in the minds of Hoosiers and add to the possible persecution of current Americans? Cole, I'll start with you on that one.
I think so. His comments and his directive are extremely dangerous. They're promoting discrimination against a certain group or certain groups, and that's not the values that we hold as Americans, or let alone as Hoosiers here in Indiana. So I feel for this caller and the importance of welcoming anyone and the contributions that people from many different countries have made. So I often bring up the example, Albert Einstein was a refugee. So what would America be without people of Einstein's caliber that came here fleeing for their lives?
Again, we are talking about the Syrian refugee situation. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Pete, welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a comment. I have some Syrian friends, and we were discussing the situation, and they reminded me that a significant portion of the Syrian population are Jews, Christians, Druze, Kurds, and Shia Muslims, which don't participate in the Sunni terrorist activities. Nobody seems to mention that there are a lot of Syrians that don't fit into the terrorist category. That's my comment.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Ron.
I'd say that I was in the Middle East back in April and May with other religious leaders from the Christian Church Disciples of Christ and the United Church of Christ to assess the situation there, and sat in living rooms and church halls with Syrians who had been displaced and other persons that have been displaced, Christians, Jews, Muslims, little children, grandmothers barely able to walk. Trying to find their way home. That's plan A, finding a way to settle the situation in those particular places so people can have a home that's safe and where they're protected and their children can grow. But plan B is always, when plan A doesn't work, what do we do? And I listened to the stories of lawyers and doctors and of students that have been displaced from university education, not knowing what tomorrow might bring. Breaks your heart, and we can do better.
I would Jane. Just add to that a reminder of what's the definition of a refugee. And in this instance, with Syrians, they are fleeing the very terror that they're being accused of. They're fleeing violence, and they wouldn't be in this situation, as Ron has said, unless that were true.
That's something we really haven't talked about so far, is what things are like in Syria right now. The level of the bloodshed and the repression. Cole, could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Well, since the civil war broke out about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, the population of Syria now has around 11 million less people. So 4 million have had to flee, and the remainder of that are internally displaced. So this is a massive humanitarian crisis. And if you lump that on top of the global situation right now, where we have 60 million displaced people in the world and 20 million of those being what we'd call refugees, this is a high water mark since World War II.
So, again, if I'm doing my math, Syria is not a huge, huge country. It's sizable, but it's
correct.
Not. If we're talking about 11 million people who have at some level been displaced among the 60 million worldwide, that one country has accounted for about 20% or 1 in 5 of those those people.
And it's essentially half the population of Syria is not living in their homes anymore. They're either outside the country or displaced within.
We are talking about the Syrian refugee situation here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Sandy, welcome to the program.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Here's my question. Inasmuch as this is a world crisis, if you will, the Auschwitz of our time, and the Syrian refugees in particular, who are the most vetted and screened group of all refugees, and it's years in their petitioning to come to the United States. So what can we do individually to both disavow and protest Governor Pence's actions? It's a great frustration to see this on the outside and then say, now what is my role? To say this is wrong.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sandy. I'm going to throw that one first to Jane.
I would say the traditional methods of citizens speaking to government, that's the great power of democracy. So, and we have venues, whether that's talking directly to your elected officials, writing them letters. And remember that it's not just these concerns have not just come up on the state level, they've also on the national level, there's been legislation proposed, thankfully at the moment, not succeeding, that would reject refugees in a way that doesn't comport with humanity, let alone the constitutional law. So talking directly to your elected officials at every level, but also letters to the editor, other ways of expressing your views. We live in a time where there are lots of avenues for that, and it's something that our elected officials pay attention to. They hear what the civic and public dialogue is, and so use your voice.
I'm going to ask Ron and Cole this. Excuse me, but have public officials in the state been I'm assuming you've tried to talk with them about this. Have they been responsive at all, Ron?
I've watched some of our public officials literally change their minds based on the factual information that they've received regarding issues like this. I've never been as proud of Joe Donnelly as when he changed his mind on the DREAM Act and the support of the children that were in need of safety and stability in their lives. I watched a week or so ago when his mind changed again on an issue that he had said that he would not change his mind on. I believe that there is an impact in writing and calling our representatives and making our statements known. And I would love to see in this case a miracle meridian at the governor's place take place, like the miracle on 34th Street, where there will be an inundation of mail and letters saying that let's do the right thing here and let's back off.
Cole.
We haven't heard too much from elected officials. I've sent some personal messages to some of them, to their emails. But to the caller's initial question here, I think, as Jane said, too, making sure your voices are heard by these elected officials, that we can't let fear and hatred overtake welcoming and love. And furthermore, there's a big opportunity coming in November where we can tell Pence exactly how we feel. And I think we need to start looking forward to that.
Well, and Ron, I'm going to throw this one back to you. And I know we've got calls coming in. I promise our listeners I will try to get to them as quickly as possible. Is the religious community, the faith community, united on this issue? Because one of the things I found curious about this situation as a longtime political reporter in my life is, normally people lobby the governor, but in some ways with the archbishop, it was the governor lobbying him instead to try to get support.
Yes.
Where is the faith-based community on this?
The faith-based community is divided. However, there are certain core values to our faith suppositions and practices that lead the way here, determining that how we treat one another is paramount to how well the world works, how well people get along together, how much progress is made. And people of faith always balance their limited viewpoints and understandings about issues like this with that broader faith conviction that there may be a better way ahead. And so the people that I know and work with in our congregations across the United States and Canada are willing to challenge their own limitations and their own understandings of issues like this by walking into their faith and hanging on to those core values.
We are talking about the Syrian refugee situation here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Yeah, Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I think, when you look at the boondoggle at the governor's office with the so-called Religious Restoration and Freedom Act, and now this, and the expense that Indiana had to undergo to try to restore its reputation. Now we're hitting that again. I think the only good thing that's going to come out of this pattern of conduct and hypocrisy of the so-called Christian values is that maybe the Ku Klux Klan will move their offices, their headquarters in Indiana, because it seems to me that is what the trend is from this governor's office. It is a blatant disregard of American principles and law, like one of your guests said before. I mean, look at the 1965 Civil Rights Act. It says you can't discriminate on the basis of age, sex, or national origin. It's exactly what this is, and I hope the ACLU, I'm sure they're going to win this on summary judgment. But my granddad was a refugee of the Bolshevik Revolution. And, it's so easy for these people, especially the so-called religious right, who sit up on their ivory temples and look down on the rest of us to say, well, we can discriminate against people, but whatever happened to, what happened in Bethlehem at Christ's birth and them taking Mary and Joseph in, and it's just so easily forgotten. And that is, to me, what's so upsetting, is all these people claim to be so religious and such proper Christians, but when it doesn't align with what they're comfortable with is one millimeter over their comfort line, they shut it down. And it's a slap in the face to me, to the so-called faith community. The only one who's restored any faith in that community, in my opinion, is the Archbishop. And he's the only one who's done the right thing, other than some of your guests there. But I'm so glad that good man exercised some leadership and good judgment. I'll let you. I could go on for hours.
Thanks.
Clearly
you feel passionate about it. But thanks very much for the call and for sharing your thoughts, John.
John, can I just jump in and say that, I appreciate your vote of confidence in our case. And we feel very strongly that we are going to win and that we have the side of the law as well as other good things on our side. Our Constitution and our form of government allows not only for us to debate these issues, but for us to reach back and remind ourselves of the fundamental values on which our government is based. And that exercise doesn't negate the real fear we all have, right? I mean, I'm afraid. Everybody, you know, it's but what our Constitution and our values allow us to do is saying, what role is fear, and can our need for security be managed in a way that comports with our underlying values? And that's the question before us. Not that the need for security isn't real, not that the fear that some of us may be feeling isn't real, but that how do we handle and address those security concerns while keeping to our core principles? And we believe that the actions in this case in Indiana and several other states across the country of refusing refugees because of where they're fleeing, the terror they're fleeing, is wrong and is inconsistent with those values. I'm
going to try to sneak in one more call. This one is from Will. I'll ask you to be as brief as possible because we're getting tight on time. What's your question or your comment?
The thing is that, you know, we will allow people to come in. We should allow people to come in. But the one thing is, why can't we just be able to have them prove that they belong here, you know, just by able to track them, see them where they're going, how they're doing, and being able to just say, you know what, we could, after a while, just say, you know what, they are not going to be a threat to us, and then allow them to continue well with their lives. I know that having privacy is important, but I think that a little compromise from them should be, you know, allowed.
Okay. Because we are getting tight on time, I want to give Cole a chance to respond to that, speak to the vetting process. Thanks very much for the call, Will.
Yes. We know exactly who these refugees are coming from Syria. They've been through an incredibly rigorous screening process. State Department, FBI, DOD, Department of Homeland Security. They get biometrics taken, their stories vetted over and over in in-person interviews. The UN signs off on them and refers them to the U.S. in the first place. So these are not strangers. These are not unknowns. They have a story. We've heard it multiple times, and we know that they are not a security risk. Their families, their women, their children, they're the most vulnerable cases. And it's only 1% of refugees are getting resettled. So the most vulnerable out of this 20 million worldwide.
Jane, in about 10 seconds, what's the timetable for resolving the legal issue?
We have a hearing in January before the federal court, and I think the court recognizes that there's urgency here.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank all three of my guests. I have enjoyed talking with you. I can promise, and I apologize to all of our listeners whose questions we could not get to, this is not the last time we will discuss this issue. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.